WCCO Outdoors on News Talk 830. Welcome to the broadcast on this Sunday, June 28th, 2026. I'm Rob Jerisalon. I'm going to be with you for the next 1 hour. Thanks so much for tuning in as we really get into the heart of summer, right? We got 4th of July weekend coming up next weekend. I hope everybody has a great 4th and is traveling maybe this coming week with friends and family. Enjoying the heat. I hope you like heat because we got that coming here just in time for the 4th of July. I have loved the weather we've had the past couple weeks. Seasonable, normal temperatures, maybe even a degree or two below normal. I've just loved it. Good sleeping weather. The grass is growing. Everything's green. What a beautiful June we had here for the most part. I've got a son, I think I've mentioned, who lives overseas. He lives in Europe right now. Man, have they been dealing with the heat, you know, high 90s, 100 degree kind of heat. And there's no AC over there. So I think it finally got back to normal for him this weekend. But indeed, they've been dealing with temperatures, you know, 30, 35 degrees above normal, above average. Really a major heat wave across the pond. Two great guests joining us here this week. First, we'll have Colleen Fehrenbacher. She's what I would call a young outdoors leader here in the state of Minnesota. She's the executive director of the Eagle Bluff Learning Center down in Lanesboro. We've got a number of great little environmental learning centers here in Minnesota. She leads one of them. She's also a board member for Backcountry Hunters and Anglers here in Minnesota, the Minnesota chapter. So we'll talk to her about that. Then our buddy Ron Husvet's going to call in. Ron joins me here about once a year. I usually check in with him in late June or early July. We look ahead to Game Fair, which is coming up, what, 5-6 weeks from now? He's also been fishing on Lake Superior for lake trout, so we'll talk about that. We don't talk enough about Great Lakes fishing here on the show. We'll spend a few minutes with Ron talking about that. A number of big news topics that I can get to as I am wont to do. One, we got some feedback from wildlife managers across the farmland portion of Minnesota, mostly the southwestern part of the state, talking about how the pheasant hatch has gone this year. This is really a critical month for pheasants because if you get a lot of rain and you get a lot of cold temperatures, it can kill the young pheasant chicks after they hatch. And we've had some rain. We've had, you know, places where we've had some downpours. And like I say, it was a little cooler than normal, but it wasn't cold. And so the outlook is pretty optimistic for the pheasant hatch here this spring. I believe they say between 60 and 70% of the birds that are taken during the pheasant season are actually that year's hatch, young of the year birds. So having a good hatch is really critical to having decent hunting. And it looks like that's how it's shaping up. Once you get those chicks to a certain age, they can deal with heat. There's been enough moisture to produce insects. That's mostly what young pheasants are eating, high protein bugs. And so really most of the hurdles for raising pheasants on the landscape for this fall, we've already cleared them. So bottom line, it's looking like we might have ourselves a good pheasant hunting season. You know, we're coming off another fairly mild winter, a couple mild winters. So we had a number of adult birds that were able to produce a good hatch, and some of those adult birds will be available for hunting this fall too. So it's always good to share some positive notes, some upbeat notes. And then one other topic before we go to our first break, a national topic. You know, I got to admit, I've been thinking about this reflecting pool in Washington, D.C. on the National Mall. It's been a big story, the algae in the reflecting pool. It's almost gotten a little ridiculous. 20 years ago or so, I used to visit my brother, who's a Marine out east, and when I was more of a runner, we would run up and down the National Mall from the U.S. Capitol to Arlington Cemetery and back and run, you know, past the reflecting pool. Of course, a lot of movies have been filmed around the reflecting pool. It's an important national asset, and you know, and you can find old pictures from the 60s and 70s of people dipping their legs in the reflecting pool, sitting next to it. It looks all clean. And I'm thinking, what happened there? Why is the reflecting pool such a mess now? And I did a little research. I talked to our friend Steve McComas, the lake detective, who joined us here not long ago. And you know, he told me, you know, you got to think of the reflecting pool as just a small pond, a cement pond. He said it's roughly 7 acres. It's very shallow. And he told me that what happened was during the Obama era, they did a big renovation of the reflecting pool. Of course, you know, the whole city's built on a swamp, right? So you've got that kind of going on underneath it. And what they decided to do was stop using chlorinated drinking water in the reflecting pool and start using water from the Potomac or the adjacent tidal pool, which, you know, all politics aside, I'd like to think most people would agree is probably a good idea, right? Let's not use chlorinated drinking water. That's expensive. That's a finite resource or an expensive resource. If you can use other water and do that more affordably, That's a good idea. I don't think anyone would argue with that. It sounds like the problem, though, is they're not, it wasn't getting flushed through enough. You know, that water coming from the Potomac or the tidal pool has algae in it. And so if you're not moving it through, yeah, it's going to sit there and it's going to stagnate. And, you know, we got more ducks and geese these days, right? They're contributing to it also. I mean, there were ducks certainly 30, 40 years ago. I think there's more. I think there's more geese too, obviously. We're dealing with warmer summers. No one wants to acknowledge that. That ties back to my comment about Europe too. And algae thrives in warm, shallow water. So, you know, go figure, you're going to deal with these algae blooms there. It sounds like they're trying some things like these nano bubble devices, and McComas was like, they're going to solve it. You know, they're going to figure this out. But the Obama administration spent money on this. The Trump administration clearly is spending money on it. We all want it to look better and clearer. We just need to apply some science to it, right? And I think probably the main thing is circulating that water through there more frequently. If there's a way to do that, obviously this is all expensive. And I hope some of these other techniques, it didn't look like the hydrogen peroxide did much, but maybe the nano bubbles will, because I thoroughly enjoy visiting Washington, D.C. I've taken my kids out there a number of times. I love sitting on the steps in front of the Lincoln Memorial and looking out at the reflecting pool and the Washington Monument. Like I say, it is a national asset. And one thing that's always struck me when I go to D.C. is how there are people from all over the world who love to visit Washington, D.C. It is a remarkable beacon of freedom for people around the world, and we want it to look nice. So I hope they figure out the reflecting pool here this summer in time for our 250th birthday next weekend, right, everybody? With that, let's grab a break. We will return. We'll talk with Colleen Fehrenbacher from the Eagle Bluff Environmental Learning Center down in Lanesboro when we return. This is WCCO Outdoors. WCCO Outdoors on News Talk 830. Welcome back to the broadcast on this Sunday, June 28th. I'm Rob Jerisline. We're going to talk with a new guest for the first time on the broadcast here today, Colleen Fehrenbacher. She's a environmental educator and big-time hunter. She hunts elk out in Colorado. I think we'll talk to her about that. Another quick elk note, we do have an elk herd here in Minnesota. I've talked about that. I've ranted about it. I wish we had more elk here in the state. I wrote my column about it in this week's Outdoor News. But there are 12 permits for folks to go hunt elk in the Northwest this year. If you would like to apply and try to get one of those 12 permits, you need to do it by Tuesday, July 7th. So there's a big date to remember. If you want to learn more about the application process or elk in our fine state, just go to mndnr.gov and search elk management, and you'll find all the information you could possibly want about our fairly small elk herd here in the Gopher State. Most of the hunting for that species occurs during September. So if that interests you, just make sure you apply by Tuesday, July 7th. All right, let's bounce down to southeastern Minnesota now. I want to introduce Colleen Fehrenbacher, who I would describe as an up-and-coming personality on the state outdoor scene. She has not been on the show before, but she's been a great addition to Outdoor News over the past, I don't know, roughly 6 months or so. She hails from southeast Minnesota, my old stomping grounds down in Lanesboro, and she joins us now during a beautiful summer day, another beautiful summer weekend. Colleen, thanks for carving out some time to chat with me.
Absolutely. Excited to be here.
Colleen, I would argue you're one of the leading outdoors women in the state of Minnesota already. You're the executive director down at the Eagle Bluff Environmental Learning Center in Lanesboro. You're also a board member for Minnesota Backcountry Hunters and Anglers. You're a columnist in Outdoor News. Tell us about your background and the road, I guess, that led you to where you are here in Minnesota these days.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's a very generous title for me. I mean, I definitely love doing all things in the outdoors, but I moved to Minnesota 16 years ago now with the intention of just being here for a year. I was an intern at Eagle Bluff Environmental Learning Center with the idea of just basically learning how to become an effective outdoor educator. I have a biology degree, but I wasn't sure what I wanted to do with that. And when I found the ability to like go teach at a center and learn how to become an effective teacher, I was like, I'll try that. Maybe this is my career path. And in coming here, yes, I gained a ton of experience like learning how to be an educator and had fun with kids in the outdoors. But the biggest thing for me about working and living at Eagle Bluff was the exposure to all of the amazing opportunities in Minnesota for being outside, whether that's going to the Boundary Riders to canoe or floating down the river and getting to see all the fish in the river or learning about hunting, which is really like magnified the time I spend in the outdoors. Like that is now, it drives almost every part of my life. Mm-hmm. And I feel like I got into that when I was 26. I feel like now I'm trying to like make up for 26 years of not doing any hunting activities.
Let's talk a little bit about environmental learning centers. I don't know that I've talked about that a lot on the radio show in recent years, but we've got, what, 4 or 5 environmental learning centers around the state. They're all great. I've been to a bunch of these facilities. Of course, I've got a soft spot for Eagle Bluff because it's down in my neck of the woods, southeast Minnesota Bluff Country, which I consider some of the most important landscapes we've got in the upper Midwest. What is an environmental learning center? And speak specifically to what you got cooking at Eagle Bluff.
Yeah, for sure. We're really lucky in Minnesota to have so many outdoor learning centers, whether it's nature centers or environmental learning centers, particularly ones that do overnight programming, which is what I'm going to speak to. And like you said, there are 5 in Minnesota. There were 6 prior to COVID. Primarily what we do is get kids outside to have positive experiences. And what set us apart from perhaps other nature centers or outdoor centers is primarily what we do is overnight multi-day experiences. And we primarily serve schools. So specific to Eagle Bluff, we host about 130 schools annually that come from Minnesota, Wisconsin, Iowa, Illinois. We have one from Missouri, and huge shout out. We had one from France this past year, which was pretty incredible. Yep. And so they come to our center and they stay usually 3 days and 2 nights and take classes in science topics, cultural history, or like team building and adventure. And each center has probably 30 to 40 classes to choose from, but it's up to the teacher to decide what do they want the goals of the trip to be. And then they work with us. We create a schedule of classes that meet their academic goals. Maybe their goals are for more team building or social emotional learning. And then they come here and have an amazing experience while getting fed and staying in a climate controlled dormitory. Mm-hmm. And again, having fun in the outdoors. And the kicker is they don't get to use their phones. So they're truly being disconnected and having to connect with each other, including teachers and, you know, their peers in the outdoors.
If there's an educator or a parent out there listening who is saying, I'd love to get my kid involved at Eagle Bluff or another environmental learning center, what's your website? And we'll circle back to this again at the end of our segment.
Yeah, EagleBluffMN, like Minnesota.org.
EagleBluffMN.org. This is WCCO Outdoors. We're chatting with Colleen Fehrenbacher. She's the executive director at Eagle Bluff Environmental Learning Center down in Lanesboro. We're talking about what she's got cooking at that center and also just about her background and how she's become very active, a leader in that, some might say, on our outdoor scene. Tell us how you got involved with Backcountry Hunters and Anglers. And where are you from originally? I mean, you didn't grow up hunting the backcountry, right?
I didn't grow up hunting at all, so no. Originally from Northeast Ohio, bopped around a little bit in California, Louisiana, and Georgia post-college, and then, you know, landed here 16 years ago. You know, as I've gotten to know more about the hunting community and gotten really passionate about conservation and our public lands, I started learning more about the various wildlife and conservation organizations out there, and Backcountry Hunters and Anglers definitely stood out and attracted my attention largely because of their advocacy work around public lands. And newer to Minnesota, when, you know, when I first came here and living at Eagle Bluff, I didn't have private land and I still don't own private land. I actually live on site at Eagle Bluff. And so if I were going to go recreating or hunting, it was largely on public land. And where Eagle Bluff is located, we're pretty lucky that we've got a lot, hundreds of acres of state land around us. And so even prior to hunting, a lot of my recreation time was on that public land. And again, learning about what BHA's mission is, I was like, this is an organization I want to be a part of. And I did a mentored hunt with some board members for Backcountry Hunters and Anglers probably 3 years ago. There was a turkey hunt. And that's where I really started learning about what they do in the Minnesota chapter. And about a year and a half ago, one of the board members approached me and said, hey, I think you'd be a really great board member. And I was unsure of my capacity at the time, but that was one of those ones where I was like, I'm going to find a way to make this work because the Minnesota chapter in general is a leader across the country.
Yeah,
I think we have the second largest membership anywhere in the country behind Montana. Mm-hmm. So I've been on the board now for about a year and I'm still trying to figure out how the board works and what our main initiatives are and how we, you know, choose our priorities. But It's a great group of people, and I'm really excited to continue with them.
You're trying to recruit some more women to the organization? Is that part of your personal
definitely.
Mission?
Right now I'm on a board of all men, which is totally fine. But yeah, I'd definitely love to get some more women on the board and women involved in the chapter as well, because that's something that I've definitely struggled with is finding women to share the passion of hunting with. And I've got a pretty good crew right now, thanks to the DNR Becoming an Outdoor Woman program. I've really mm-hmm. connected with folks there. And now several times a year, we go on hunting trips together.
You're a hardcore dog person. You've got, what did you say, two golden retrievers and a Brittany. Are you emphasizing upland bird hunting mostly with those canines?
Absolutely. That is why we have them. And I did not grow up with Brittany's. I grew up with golden retrievers. And so it's really fun to have the flushers with the pointer. It's definitely been a challenge as far as training. And our oldest golden retriever is lazy and she watches the Brittany and then we'll jump into the flush, which frustrates me.
They're smart. Hey,
they are for sure. So we now, my husband and I will often hunt them separately just so that the golden doesn't get too lazy. But love hunting behind them. You know, I've taken multiple people out with me. Those folks have no interest in actually shooting a gun, but they love coming along to watch the dogs work.
And you had a great column about your elk hunting experiences. There's not a lot of, I think, young women who've hunted elk as much as you have, Colleen.
Oh, it's only 4 years, but it is a huge passion of mine. I pulled a tag for Colorado this year, and what I love about it is it gives me something year round to train for and have a goal for. And right now I'm deep into the fitness part of things. I'm a 5'4½" female and that mountain does not get any smaller just because I'm small.
You've killed some turkeys, right?
Yes.
I used to work for a bull hunting magazine and my mentor there, he said he considered elk 700-pound turkeys. He thought there were a lot of similarities between hunting the two species with the calling and running up and down the hills and the terrain and that sort of thing. Yeah. You buy that?
Well, I don't want to because this was the first year I hunted turkeys with my bow and I failed miserably because I got too amped up. I was able to take two shots, but I was so excited because they were like 10 yards away. I completely biffed it. But to your point, I would agree with you. It's so much like elk hunting because you're talking to them. I call it some of the most optimistic hunting you'll do because you know they're there if they are calling, right? But that's the reason why I bow hunted turkeys this year was to practice under pressure. My husband was like, you should do that. And unfortunately, I just messed it up.
That same mentor who was the best bull hunter I ever knew, he's in the Bull Hunting Hall of Fame, as he should be. He also said of turkey hunting, turkeys are meant to have their heads blown off by shotguns. He did not believe in wasting his time with a bow on turkeys. But hey, to each his own. And I think your concept there to build experience for elk hunting with a bow via turkey hunting is an admirable one.
Thank you.
Colleen, I'm out of time here. It's really been fun to get to know you a little more. I encourage folks to read you in Outdoor News, where you write once a month, and you've had some great columns with a lot of good photos. It's been a great addition to Outdoor News. One more time, if folks want to get their kids involved with what you got cooking down there at Eagle Bluff Environmental Learning Center, how can they do that?
They can check us out at eaglebluffmn.org or find us on Facebook or Instagram.
eaglebluffmn.org. Well, thanks a lot for spending this segment with me. Have a great summer. Good luck with your training and good luck chasing elk in the mountains of Colorado this fall.
Thanks so much, Rob.
That was Colleen Fehrenbacher. Check out Eagle Bluff Environmental Learning Center at eaglebluffmn.org. Let's grab a break. More of the broadcast after these messages. WCCO Outdoors on News Talk 830. Welcome back to the broadcast on this Sunday, June 28th. Rob Gerisline with you here for another segment. Ron Husvet's going to join me in just a moment. We're going to talk fishing, grab bag of outdoor summer topics. Before I do that, however, got a press release from the Minnesota DNR this past week. The agency has added 5 new counties to the deer feeding and attractant ban around the state. These are areas where we're looking to reduce the risk of chronic wasting disease spread, areas where CWD has been found maybe nearby or in an adjacent county. In general, the DNR is discouraging people from feeding deer It congregates them. It's more likely to jump from animal to animal when you have them in close contact to one another. The counties added to the feeding and attractant ban are Becker, Clearwater, Grant, McLeod, and Meeker. There are now 37 counties in Minnesota where there is a feeding and attractant ban. And Minnesota has, what, 87 counties? So we're starting to bear down on almost half of the counties in the state where you're not allowed to feed deer. And unfortunately, I suspect that list is just going to continue to grow, continue to work its way north. But anyway, go to outdoornews.com or mndnr.gov, and you can see the complete list of counties and find out if yours is one of the 37. All right, let's talk some summer topics now. A gentleman who joins me here about once a year, usually every June, he checks in. He's a educator during the regular school year, and during the summer, he's got a lot of different things cooking. It's our friend Ron Husfeldt. He's from the Northwest Metro. He's a familiar face out of Game Fair, which is not too far off. And he joins us now, actually calling in from the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. How are you doing, Ron?
I'm doing fantastic. I'm just off of a logging road up here, so hopefully you don't hear a logging truck go by, but you can hopefully hear the creek and the birds in the background. It's gorgeous up here right now.
It's a gorgeous part of the upper Midwest. I haven't been back there in a while, but I wanted to talk to you a little bit. You get out on the big lake, Lake Superior, and do the lake trout thing this time of year. I don't have any experience fishing lakers on Lake Superior. I've done it on a lot of our inland lakes. I associate lake trout up there with being in super deep water. I don't know. Do they come up? Are they in, you know, more shallower water, the top tier of the lake, you know, right after ice out like they are on smaller lakes? But whatever, right now they're deep, right?
They're kind of all over the water column. It sort of depends on, you know, the current seams and the water temperatures. And it's still pretty cold right now. So I know there's some guys where we go out of is in the Lance Berga area there by the Keweenaw Peninsula. And some folks like to do they like to troll. We go with my wife's uncle who lives up here, and he does a thing that's called bobsticking. It's a very Uper style of fishing. It's basically you get this wooden or plastic, basically a big oval shape, and it's 2 feet around per wrap. So you're basically hand lining with coated cable line, so you get the weight. You've got a big, huge 2 to 4 ounce jig on there. You can use glow, or you can have some hair on there, or just have a regular old jig. But you tip it with either a chunk of like a sucker minnow, or a chunk of a smelt, or both if you want
something oily. A chunk of meat, huh?
Chunk of meat, oily, and you want to hide that hook in the meat so that they don't see the hook. That seems to make a difference. And then you count the number of wraps as it slowly rolls off, and you watch it drift down into the abyss. And we're fishing out there anywhere usually from 180 to 240 feet. So that's a lot of wraps a line coming off as you go down there. And it doesn't take long to get good at finding the bottom and then being able to adjust. And you're fishing usually just right off the bottom, maybe anywhere from a couple inches to a couple feet. You play around, experiment, and you're bobsticking. You're jigging for them. When you feel the weight, as soon as you feel it, you obviously set the hook and you start pulling fast. And these are, you know, we're talking deep down fish. So the key is you pull fast and you get them up before they can get too much of a fight into them. You catch a really big one, and no matter what, you're going to get a fight. And if you do have a big one, everybody else has to start pulling up really fast as well. Otherwise, you're going to end up, you know, pulling in all the lines.
You'll get tangled up if you don't.
Oh, yeah. You'll get very tangled up. Mm-hmm. But otherwise, if you pull fast, they seem to sort of just streamline up. And once they get enough of a pressure change, they don't fight too hard. You know, pull up the line. You let it coil at your feet, kind of like old school ice fishing. And you net them right at the boat there. And it's a great way. It's a lot of fun to catch a fairly good amount of lake trout on a good day out there. I forgot to mention, you anchor down so that you're not drifting too far. Because when you've got that much line out, the reason you use such a heavy jig is because there's quite a current out there. And you can tell when if somebody in your group is using an airplane jig, or somebody in your group is, if everybody's got like 2.5, 3 ounce jigs and somebody has a 1.5 ounce, they'll usually end up getting tangled up in one of the other people's lines. There's enough current that it pulls that one into somebody else's. But it's a fun way to fish. You can get, you know, 4 or 5. We've gotten 6 people in the boat with lines down at one time. You know, you sort of, it's like I said, it's kind of a open water way to ice fish. You'll get some good action. And these are kind of the more oily lake trout. I'm not sure if they're officially the Siskoids or if they're just sort of the more oily lake trout that like to be on the bottom in that deep water. But they taste really good. They're great smoked, but they're also really good grilled, and they grill up just fine. So,
what's the biggest one you've caught out there, Ron?
Oh, we've caught a couple in the 8, 9, 10 pound range.
Okay.
So, gentleman that we go with, Uncle Dave, we call him, he's caught 20 pounders mm-hmm. out there. So there's some mm-hmm. big ones down there. But it's a different way to fish that is definitely worth checking out.
I've never been a huge lake trout fan. I mean, when they're fresh out of the water and you fry them, then they're okay fried. Otherwise, I'd like your idea of grilling them. I think that's the best way to go. It's not as dark or red as a salmon. It's not as light as whitefish. It's kind of orangish. It kind of falls in between, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's got that nice orange color. When you grill it, I don't know, it pulls some of the oils out. It's a little more of an oily fish on average. But it tastes really, really good. Anybody who's ever been to any of the places on the North Shore that service fresh lake trout, there's a couple of places I know that we go to in Grand Marais, and it's phenomenal, cooked a lot of different ways. But yeah, I think grilling is the best way to go. We also go to a couple of inland lakes up here and do some trolling, some either planer boards or just get down deep with lead core. And we've caught my son and my nephew last year caught some major lake trout in the 10 to 15 pound range. Kept a couple, released most of them. We got some great photos and then some great meals out of those fish. Lake trout are really tasty.
Lake trout tips from our friend Ron Husvet. This is WCCO Outdoors. You mentioned your son, Ronnie. He wrapped up his high school shooting career at the big Minnesota Clay Target League Championships out in Alexandria last week. How did he do, Ron? What did you make of the event? I'm sure you've been there before. Was it as big as ever?
The last year was his first year making it to state, and was fun to be out there. It was even more fun this year because the weather was better, and huge crowds. It's always impressive. He's on the Blaine High School trap team, and he's the captain of the ski team. So we did that ski tournament as well, which is at the Minneapolis Gun Club. That's a lot smaller event. But the one at Alexandria for the trap shooting, that's a huge, huge event. You walk around from one end to the other, and I feel like it's almost a mile the whole way across. It's tons of teams out there shooting, a lot of young people having a really good time, and some really good shooters out there as well.
One of the biggest shooting events in the world, I think. What a tremendous success that has been, and congrats to Ronnie. He's off to college. You told me what he's doing, focusing on heading into a wildlife or fisheries career.
Yeah, and actually the trap and skeet shooting got him one of these Jim Sable scholarships for environmental sciences and conservation education, and that's what he's going into. He wants to be a fish and wildlife management person, and he's going to start off his career in that at Central Lakes College up in the Brainerd Lakes area.
Good.
Was going to just go straight 4 year on University of Wisconsin Stevens Point. They've got a really good premier program.
Mm-hmm.
But he chose Central Lakes because they have, you're out in the field 3 days a week going down to the wildlife management area at Ripley down there. And he loved that you get to be out in the field right away.
We got just a couple of minutes left here, Ron. We got a press release from the Superior National Forest this past week explaining that they intend to modify their cancellation policy for Boundary Waters Canoe Area Wilderness permits. You and I are both BWCA guys. That's something we chat about every year. I like what they're doing. I'm glad. I think this has been a long time coming. I wish they had done it sooner. What's your take on it?
Yeah, in looking at the structure of how they do it, so basically, when you want to go to the Boundary Waters, you make a reservation, and you used to be able to cancel right up to almost the day before you went on the trip, and you get a full refund. What's been happening in recent years is that there's been a lot of people booking trips and then canceling them at the last second. And it's sort of been detrimental to the whole system because you could do that, you get a full refund. Other folks feel like, oh, I can't go up there because there's no permits available. When you call outfitters, they would tell you, just keep your dates open and check at the last minute. There might be something opening up. But that's hard to plan a trip and take days off of. And most people don't have the flexibility in their schedule to do that. So,
no.
So they've got this, the proposed, the refund structure is now, if you cancel more than 28 days out, you get half of your deposit back. if you cancel in the last, 28 days to 3 days before, you get 1/4, 25% of your deposit back. And if you have to cancel within 2 days, you don't get any of it back.
And by the way, there's a public comment period on this. This isn't locked up. So the U.S. Forest Service, Superior National Forest, is taking comments on this a number of different ways. I tell you what, go to outdoornews.com. We've got a story about it. You can find the links to it there. It's something I support, and I intend to offer my 2 cents on that myself, Ron.
Yeah, same here.
Hey, before we go, gamefair.com, I want to remind folks, visit that. We've got 2 weekends of Game Fair, August 7th, 8th, and 9th, and 14th, 15th, and 16th. You'll be running around out there again. Chuck Delaney is planning another big year of Game Fair at the Armstrong Ranch up in Ramsey.
This is the 45th year of Game Fair is right here. So if people have not been out there yet, go to gamefair.com, check out the photos and the videos, or visit us on the social media, Game Fair USA, and it's a great time. Bring your dog, bring the family, and have a great day outdoors, and lots of experiences for the kids of all ages, actually, and also for the dogs, lots of doggy activities and doggy games.
You better believe it. Yeah, visit the Outdoor News booth, renew your subscription there, get a free cap when you do. It's something I always look forward to, and you and both your kids will be out there working hard again this year, Ron?
Oh, yeah, we'll be out there, the whole family.
Sounds good. Well, thanks for carving out some time while you're traveling to share what you've got cooking, some ideas on lake trout fishing, and some of the other things going on this summer. Safe travels, and we'll see you at Game Fair for sure.
It's always good to be on. Thanks, Rob.
Yeah, that's our buddy Ron Husvet. Check him out at Game Fair here in about a month and a half, gamefair.com. Let's grab a break. More of the broadcast after these messages. WCCO Outdoors on News Talk 8th Trail. Welcome back to the broadcast. Final segment of this week's show on this Sunday, June 28th. I'm Rob Gerisline. Thank you to my guests, Colleen Fehrenbacher and Ron Husvet, who joined us this week. I've got a few thoughts here before we close out our last show of the first half of 2026, right? We're halfway through the year when the calendar flips on Wednesday. Again, I hope everybody has a great 4th of July weekend. One somber note that I'll mention, I intended to include it in last week's show, but I got bumped there a little bit because of the Twins game. But we lost a longtime DNR employee. Her celebration of life was yesterday. Lori Nauman, longtime public information officer with the non-game section at the Minnesota DNR. Star Tribune had a nice story about her a few days ago. We had a letter to the editor in Outdoor News that Carol Henderson, the former director of that division, wrote remembering Lori. She had a reputation as being kind of one of the main people behind the popular Eagle Cam and the Falcon Cam at the Minnesota DNR. So if you have ever paused to watch either of those cams on the DNR website, please pause and remember Lori. So many dedicated public servants like that who do great work for natural resources and at the federal level, the state level, even the local and county levels. And my strong condolences to friends, family, and coworkers of Lori. Before I go, though, a couple of other items I wanted to mention. We had a big press release from the Minnesota DNR a little over a week ago now. 9 record fish were caught in Minnesota this spring from a massive new state record bluegill that topped 2 pounds, a black crappie that was over 4 pounds, and then a bunch of catch and release records. The Minnesota DNR revamped its record fish program a couple of years ago, and so that's why we're getting all these new records, right? We've got all these new categories for catch and release fish. And then the DNR took some of the old, I hate to call them classic records, but some that they felt were never truly verified and put them into like this heritage category. So a lot of these popular sport fish, bluegills, even the walleye, those overall records are open. Well, they're being filled now per all the records we had this spring, but that's why we're getting all these new records. So we printed them all in this week's edition of Outdoor News, page 5, if you want to see them. And like I say, if you've ever wanted to establish a state record fish yourself, now's the time. You can find all the details on the DNR website, mndnr.gov/fishing/state records. Go there and you can find out how to register a potential state record. Go there and see what categories are kind of open. Go out and catch a state record for yourself. We got a big long holiday weekend coming at us in just a few days. That would be a good opportunity to get out there and do that. And then I guess a closing thought, CB Bylander, former DNR employee, wrote a column recently called Quality Fishing Didn't Happen by Accident. And he's got a picture of himself with a big lake sturgeon that he caught on Rainy River. And CB pointing out that the reason we have good fishing, not only in the Rainy, but in so many other places, the Mississippi River where I grew up, which used to almost be an open sewer 60, 70 years ago, the reason that great fishing exists is because of regulations like the Clean Water Act. And regulation has unfortunately become a dirty word with some folks. I think with the vast majority of the American public, when you explain that regulation, especially environmental regulations, are necessary so that we can have clean rivers and that we can see things like great blue herons flying overhead, thanks to laws like the Migratory Bird Treaty Act. And, you know, rivers aren't burning anymore and we're catching incredible fish and we have access to better drinking water. And we just overall have access to a cleaner environment, plus public lands. That's all the result of someone going to the mat years ago and fighting for zoning or regulations that allowed that to happen. And sometimes regulations get in our way and they're a hassle and they add a little red tape, but there is an overall public good that we all benefit from. And many of us will be benefiting from it over the big holiday weekend, just a few days away. So thank you, CB, for writing that. And I'm going to keep harping on it. The quality outdoors that we all enjoy here in the 21st century didn't happen by accident. With that, everybody have a great 4th of July. I'm Rob Gerisine signing off for WCCO Outdoors.